Okay, good afternoon. Good afternoon. It's so good to see you all again. Yesterday we had a really good time. I know the topics can be a little grueling because we're doing a little bit of historical, time and setting, and it can become very tedious or a little bit overwhelming with information. But I gave you some information so that if you forgot, you could actually have it at home to go over so that you would know exactly how women's ministry started and how it has progressed over the years. And that was for yesterday. Now today, we're going to look at it from the biblical perspective. You know, women in Bible times and what were their conditions. And we're going to be learning together because if we don't do something interactive, you might want to sleep. And I don't want you to sleep. And I want you to learn as much as you can. So we're going to do the method of teaching each other. We're going to get different segments being taught by different groups. And so that's why I gave you the information this morning. The information that you got this afternoon, rather, is your handout. You're going to get a total package of it at the end of the session. So the first part of it is going to tell us about the original conditions of women into the Bible times. And group one is going to do something about that for us. They're going to tell us about coming from Adam and Eve, coming down to how men viewed themselves in terms of their preference in gender as they went along in Bible times. And we're going to go right down until we talked about how parents felt when they had a girl or a boy. And that would be group one, which is over here. And if anybody wants to come and join her, it would be very nice if we even had one other person joining her over here so that she can have a group. We have a volunteer that would like to join her. Okay. And that would be group one. And then group two is going to talk about Bible times, how marriage was viewed and how divorce was viewed by everyone. And that would be your group, right? Your group two? Are you group two? Then we go on to look on rape. You will also talk about rape and how that was viewed and how captives were viewed and women, their own position in marriage. Then we're going to go on to group three. Where do we have group three? We have group three over here, and they're going to talk about what women wanted in Bible time, what was really, really important for them, and how to it sort of raised their stature if they had it. And then we are going right on to how mothers were looked at in Bible times. You're going to do that also. Then we come on to group four, which is right here, and they're going to look at polygamy and the difference between the roles of wives and concubines in the Bible. How did the Bible view widows and orphans and slaves? And also, what did the law have to say about that? And how did Paul look at widows in New Testament? Then group five. Where is group five? It's over there. And we're going to talk about a woman's work is never done. You're going to talk about the different roles women play in Bible times, the tasks that they have to do, and the different professions that they had. And they are going to end up with the woman in Proverbs 31. Then group six. Where is group six? Right over there. They're going to talk about at the temple. How did the women, their roles at the temple, why they had to be at the temple, what were the different roles that they had, the prophetesses and the different roles that women play when they went to the temple. And then we have group seven that is going to talk about the dress, the difference in the dress, the male versus the female dress in the Bible, and also the New Testament times. I'm going to talk about the New Testament women and the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament, and then we will have our conclusion. So right now, conditions of women in the Bible, and we're going to call up group one to sort of talk with us. Are you ready? Or
not quite clear.
Okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to give all the groups 5 minutes to go through what they need to go through so that we can start. Yes, have some time to discuss it. And then I will walk around to each group. Yes, let me, okay. Yes, what you just did, you read through that, and from that you glean your answer, and you're just going to go up for a very short time and just say the question.
Basically,
and
the,
yes, yes, you're just going to say what the question is and then answer it, you know, or you're just going to answer the question so that it continues and we can just get the salient points out of it. Not anything very long, because we have a short session,
yeah,
and we have seven people. And you can decide to present it anyway, like you can go up and you ask her the question, she answer, and vice versa, or, you know, but just make it as succinct as possible. Okay. Your Bible. Did you want to borrow my phone? Because let me see if I can find your Bible. Mm-hmm. They're looking for a Bible. Yeah, you know, we travel with our phones, so yep. We are, but the older ones. And I asked her if she wants to borrow my phone, but they are not phone savvy. No, they are not phone savvy. So. I think the text, there, it's all summarized there for them already. It's just for, that I want them to present it here.
And then some of them have Bible scriptures. So.
So how are we doing?
We're just trying to figure out
how you're going to present it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because all the answers are there.
Yes.
It's just that you know, you can either go up there as a group and one asks the question and you do succinct answers.
So just give them this information.
Yes, just give them the information.
Okay.
So that it's not just one person up there trying to. Okay. How are we doing here?
Good.
It's good. Okay. The answers are into the summary there, somewhere, you know, of the questions. And what you can decide is how you're going to present it when you come up there, whether one is going to ask somebody else the question, the other one answers it, or whether you're just going to talk and have the answers when you talk, or whichever way you feel best to present it. Okay.
Can we have an extra
5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So.
Or how deep are you wanting us to go?
Well, we have very limited time, as you know. The hour goes really fast, and So what I wanted you to do is bring out the points that are in the lesson right there, and so it's really how you're going to present it. You know, decide how you're going to present it, and as succinctly as possible. But each person is going to have 5 minutes up there, each group. Okay.
So I would just say that she knew God, but she.
So how are we doing?
Okay, I'll find you.
How are we doing here? Okay. You think you're going to be good for presenting it? Or did you decide how you want to present it afterwards? Because the group will present, you know, the questions and the answers. But you're a very young group, so I have nothing to worry about. You're good with that. Okay.
So we
Is it going here? Good?
Yes.
Okay.
The sun
Can you time the groups for me? Because I can only give them 5 minutes each. Once I call them out, you're going to have to put on the you're going to have to put on the timer so that for 5 minutes for each group.
Therefore,
So unfortunately, we have time limits, and we are going to start now to actually do the review. Each of you will have 5 minutes up here. I'm going to ask Pastor Rogers to do the timing for us. And I don't know if everybody here met me before, but my name is Joan Rogers, as Sister Moody has told you. And I am here as the Women's Ministry Director for Ontario Conference and for the Liaison for all of Canada. And I am here for your certification this week. Some of you were not here yesterday. We have the materials and we can give it to you and we can talk to you about it. Right now we are going to start with the condition of women in Bible time, and we're going to have the first group, which is over here, group number one, coming up and presenting for us. Each group will get 5 minutes to answer the questions that they have. The timer will be over there and it will beep at the end of your session. Okay? So, and what's your names?
Wendy
and Shannon. Wendy and Shannon are going to talk to us about the original conditions of women in the Bible, in Bible times.
Okay, what is the significance of women as, what is the significance of women as crown?
All right, so in the commentary that we were given on our sheet, it talks about the man is created as head of a home, but the woman is the crown, a crown to her husband, and the crown is a visible creation. So what we kind of talked about is, if you met someone for the first time and you saw them wearing the crown, what would you notice first? I would notice the crown before I noticed. So it's something that's to be a compliment or to be very visible between a husband and a wife.
Mm-hmm.
The next question is the significance of a woman out of the side of a man.
So this is something we're all familiar with. So a woman was created from man, was taken as a rib, was to be an equal. So out of the side, to stand by, to be equal, was taken from under his arm as a sign of protection. A man was to be a protector for a woman. And it was also taken near his heart at the left side because it was to be someone that he loved, to be beloved, to be held really close to his heart.
So this is a famous Jewish prayer. And what are the three things they prayed for?
So we've read the story in the Bible about them praying on the corner.
That's okay.
For three things. The first that they prayed for was that they were thankful to not be created to be a heathen. The other one was that they were not created to be a woman, and they were not created to be a slave. And this was a prayer that they prayed regularly. So it kind of shows the history and the culture of Bible times.
How did Jesus' perspective make a difference?
So when Jesus came, his teachings made all the difference. Jesus showed complete acceptance of women. Didn't matter what their class was in life, so prostitutes, everything. And because of that, women were really drawn to him, and it was that really started to change the way women were looked upon in many aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Zelophehad's daughters, what was the daughter's request and why? And what happened as a result?
So you probably remember the story of the man in Moses' time who had daughters. I think he had five daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And when he died, they were going to take all his property and possessions and give them to male relatives because women weren't allowed to inherit property. And the daughters went to Moses and said, this is not fair. Like, how are we going to live? What are we going to do? And so Moses changed the ruling and he gave the women their father's property. And it was a new law that was made that if there were no male descendants, the women could inherit it, which was a huge change in the way that women were treated in Bible times.
Now let's give them a round of applause and they do a good job. Very, very good. Very good. Okay. So let's go over it really quickly. In Bible times, the original conditions is that it was clear that the understanding was that they felt that women were created below the male, and that the parents were always grateful not to have a girl. They preferred to have a boy. The conditions was of such that in the New Testament, the Romans and the Greeks, they had a little bit more, they gave their woman a little bit more right. But the laws that God gave to the Jews was very protective of women. But as they went into the heathen countries, they gave up some of the things that God had for them. So that was the background. As we talked about the Roman culture, we talked about the prayer that men prayed. It's two different ones. One, they prayed, but in each of them, they prayed that they were glad that they weren't a slave. They were glad they weren't a Gentile, but they were also glad they weren't born to be a woman. Isn't that sad? It's really sad, yeah. So that was it. A man is bound to say, and that's the prayer that they said, glad I'm not a heathen, glad I'm not a woman, and glad I'm not a brutish man. Also, I'm glad I'm not a Gentile, glad I'm not a slave, and I'm glad I'm not made a woman. Sad. The regards for God in the Bible, though, in that cultural time, is that God had great regards for woman. And we will see that in this story, where the daughters came. They talked about the daughters coming, five daughters. They did not feel, they spoke up. They spoke up in that day, way back there, they spoke up and they said, why should we not get our father's property? It was our father's. Why should our father's name come off of the clan just because we are girls? We need to get the property. And of course the elders prayed about it and decided to give them the property with the caveat that they must be married within that family so that the property stayed within the family. And so the girls did get married within their family so that it stayed within their family. It was the descendants of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, that those girls were really bright girls. The woman in Bible time, she was thought to be the property of her husband, the property of her husband. They were second-class citizens of such. Wouldn't want to be born in that time. The royalties seemed that the wives, they felt that they, you might feel that they add a little bit more to it because they were royalty, but not really. They were just married because of the political alliances that they could form. Even so, still with England, you know, over the years, the political alliances that they formed to get bigger empires and all of that. So they had lots of duties and they had many disappointments. So they were actually pawns in the old game of things. Okay? Now, when we're going on to the divorce section, and that is with group two. And we're going to have them up, and they're going to have their 5 minutes, and you're going to time them at the stand. Okay, and what is your name?
Esther.
Esther. And Esther, what are
Queen
you going to be
Esther.
Talking about? You're Queen Esther.
Yes.
We have Queen Esther with us, and Queen Esther is going to talk about marriage and divorce in her time.
That's right. Okay. And the question is, what was the dowry, and who did it belong to? So, there you were thinking, well, actually, it belongs to the woman, or what do you think? The dowry. don't need the other. So we thought the dowry belongs to the men.
Mm-hmm.
But the question also came up, maybe it also belongs to the girl. Because now you still have people like the people from India.
Mm-hmm.
They get their dowry, and the man gives the dowry to the bride.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a little different then, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then it talks about, until marriage, the young lady kept herself clean as a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we still do that, don't we?
Mm-hmm. We're supposed to.
And at that time, the marriage was arranged. In some countries, they still do that. And the family would set a dowry between each parents. That's what it was. And then we have in Luke 15, may have been part of the dowry or her life savings. And we didn't read that thing. A man was free from military service, so he could prepare a home for his bride. I found that very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now we talk about rape. What was the impact of rape? Of course, when a girl got raped, her dowry is gone. Her father will not get a dowry because they expect the young lady to be a virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get married, they have to prove that they are virgins.
Mm-hmm.
Describe the wedding ceremony. The wedding itself was primarily a non-religious ceremony of blessing. And then, of course, we know that the oldest one has to be married first, and we know that from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And the bride's family did supply the wedding clothes. And the story of Jacob, Rachel, and Leah, there was the bride's week.
Mm-hmm.
A young bride had to prove her virginity, which I said already, and without that, the bride could be stoned to death.
Mm-hmm.
Christ and the pure church, how can we say that?
Mm-hmm.
What does Jesus or God expect from his church,
mm-hmm.
his bride? That we are clean,
pure.
And pure.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And how was divorced viewed? Well, God looks on divorce very negative, you know that. I hate divorce, he said. Because he also said, when you get married, you become one flesh.
Okay. Let's give Esther a round of applause. Very good, group two. Very, very good. You're all good presenters because one of the objectives of this whole leadership training is for you to become presenters for this material. And so I'm trying to do a dual thing here as we go to get you involved so that you can become acquainted so that when you go back, you can run a certification program in your area for your ladies. Now, very important that there was a waiting period when the bride was betrothed to her husband, and it was just as tight as if they were married. And if the bride, if anything happens during that time and she lost her virginity, then the man did not have to give her father a dowry. And the dowry belonged to the father, not to the girl. It was like she was being sold off, you know? So if she had to be kept pure, she had to keep herself pure, but not for what she would get in the end, but her father would get the money for her. And the man, as she said, was free to take care of the woman. I think it's a whole year period they had for a honeymoon period after the wedding. And rape was an offense against the father. Now that's particular because we as women ministers, leaders, we know that the woman suffers when there is abuse like that. But no attention was really paid to the woman. It was against the father because now the father could not collect the dowry for her that he wanted to collect. And if she was in the country, if it was in the country that, if it was in the town that she was raped, they would stone both of them to death, the man who raped her as well as her, because they said that she didn't scream to let others come to help her, because people live in the town and they could have heard. And if it was in the country, they would stone the man and not the girl, because they said that there was nobody in the country to hear because they're so far away. And so that was part of the old thing, some of the ramifications there. Now, for the wedding, if the bride, if it was a virgin and she was raped, then the man had the opportunity to pay her dowry and take her as his wife. Yes. But and if he didn't choose to do that, he could choose not to marry her, but he would still have to pay the dowry to her father. And so you notice the woman had nothing to do with it. It was just like she was there. Even though it happened to her, nothing was done for her. So, and we don't want that to progress in today's world, because that will happen sometimes here in today's world. The wedding itself was a non-religious ceremony where the groom and his friends were in a procession. The veil of the woman was put on the shoulder of the bridegroom to show that he would protect her. And then they would go to his home. They would march to his home. The procession went, just like there were two other rules at that time. One was that the older child, a woman, would have to be married first. The other was that the person was heavily veiled and you couldn't see her, and she was supposed to be silent into the bedroom chamber. And that was one of the laws. Now, these are the laws against divorce easily obtained by the husband. The wife had no say. He could say, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you three times, and they were divorced. If on her marital night she could not prove that she was a virgin, then she could be stoned also. They had to have the sheet and to display evidence of her virginity the next day after she was married. So she was on display there. And, okay, so that's it. They could get a divorce. Yes? Question?
Why would it order on the woman to prove that they were virgins and not the man?
That's what we were saying, that this is the condition of woman in that era. A lot of stress was on women. They were always looked at as a second-class citizen. And there were lots of things that were unfairly done to them.
And even in today's world, most men want a virgin. Why they're out there sowing seeds?
That's the truth. Now, if the man falsely, the man brings out the claw to show that his wife was a virgin. Now, if he falsely accuses her that she was not a virgin, he cannot divorce her. He cannot divorce her. And he has to pay her father anyway for her. Because the man could go sleep with her and then come out and say, she wasn't a virgin, so I'm not paying for her. But he would still have to pay if it was untrue. And if the charge was true, then she would be stoned to death. A man was allowed to marry a captive if she was beautiful, and then he would shave her head, which is a slave, you know. He would shave her head, he was cut her nails, and he would give her a clothes to wear, and she would put away those slave clothes that she had before. The woman considered herself, now we're on to the other portion that we need to talk about from group three. Is that group three? What Bible woman wanted? Group three. So we're finished about marriage and the tradition of marriage, and now we're into what woman wanted. Group three. Okay, so we're waiting on you to come up. And what's the names of the presenters? Oh, we had. Could you just introduce yourself? And
and I'm Bethany. Okay, so our topic and first question we have was, what was a woman's perspective on childbearing? And the verses that were given to us in that section before answering that question was concerning the beauty of women, like group one had said about the crown on a woman's head. We have a series of verses that talk about how women are beautiful, and how, let's say, Abraham, one of the examples, was using the beauty of his wife, saying that your beauty is going to protect me. So they're talking about beauty, the woman's beauty a lot. Then it comes, so the first question is the perspective of women's childbearing. So we see that having children back there was extremely important, that women were valued and valued themselves by being able to bear a child. And if they weren't able to, it was considered as a disgrace, because there were lots of biblical verses that would say that they would rather die than not be able to bear a child. We have examples that the women would give to their husbands, their slaves, to be able to bear a child for them, because this is how, at that period of time, they were valued to have children. So the second question, well, what we came up in our discussion, and it was not mentioned in this study, was that we realized that the Bible was written only by men. And so since our topic was the perspective of childbearing, we thought it was a bit ironic, right, to have all these Bible verses, but all on the perspective of childbearing from men.
Mm-hmm. Basically, we can never have a true view of what the women thought back then.
No.
Second question was, how was the biological process associated with a woman's fertility viewed? I'll let you answer that.
Yeah, during the Bible time, we can see that the medical was not advanced as it is right now. And it was so dangerous for women to give birth at that time. We can see that, like the first century, it says here, like 5% of women died during the childbirth. And and the labor was so difficult. Even I think in Jeremiah it says that the pain was so unbearable, and you can just imagine. Right now we have like. They can give you painkillers and things like that, but at that time, I don't really imagine what they were going through, the women at that moment.
Yes, okay, Gallery, because she doesn't have her glasses. What about childbirth?
For the childbirth, we are they're reading for me about the verses in her that. Usually, the differences between the childbirth of the boy and the girl is that from the mother, when it's gonna be birth, it's gonna be longer, cleans to the boy, to the girl. It takes 2 weeks and 36 months, 32 weeks and 36 days, and for the boy, it only takes 1 week and 32 days. And for nowadays, for application in our life, we can say that. The differences between the boy and the girl, especially if I connect it to the group number two that they mentioned about the I mentioned about the boy has given a great opportunity for everything, leadership and managing everything. That is why they want it to be if we say they are the highest, when they get born with a boy, they are so happy. Parents are happy, and grandma and friends, and then they're with a girl. I think it's still have things, but it's just 1 minute.
So the last question was, like, how were mothers viewed biblically? And it's interesting here, the verse, and I'm actually going to read it. Isaiah 49:15. Can a woman forget her sucking child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, but I will not forget thee. And this is interesting to me, in that it's saying, actually, that the only person who loves you more than God is your mom.
Okay. Thank you so very much. Give them a round. Group three, really very, very good. A very odd topic to look at, and they did a good job at it. So in the scriptures, we had many scriptures that said that women were beautiful, and that's why men chose them, like Esther and some of the queens and the different ladies that were married to some of the kings in the Bible. But the most important thing for them was the woman would consider herself a failure if she did not have children. And usually, even if she did not have children, it was terrible. But if she didn't have a boy, sometimes it was just as bad. Because boys were the ones, the gender that was looked upon favorably, and because they grew up to take over the properties of the family. They grew up to protect the mother if the father dies, because the mothers, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go into the profession of woman and why sons were so important to women. There are three things that are never satisfied for that they say enough. A grave and a barren woman was the second. So barrenness was something that did not make women feel very good about themselves in those days. I mean, if you were born not able to conceive, you did not do it to yourself, but can you imagine how you felt? And you have the story of Hannah in the Bible that definitely shows you how Peniel was always needling her and telling her how less than she was because she was able to conceive. So it meant that it wasn't Zachariah that was the problem. It was Hannah that was the problem, and she was feeling less than. Rachel, she cried so much. She said, Jacob, no matter how much you love me, I want a child or I want to die. You know, she gave up so much for that. Babies were born at homes, wherever it was possible. They said that in the Egyptian homes, they used a birthing stool, and they are thinking, we don't have a lot of data on the Hebrew women and how they gave birth, but we do have a lot on the Egyptian women, and it is felt that if they weren't using birthing stools, they might have adapted that over the years when they were slaves in Egypt. But they also talked about how one of the ladies who had given one of the servants to her husband to have a child for her was helping her through childbirth on her knees. You know, she was actually there with her, helping her on her knees. So it was thought that, Rachel and her servant Bilhah, or one of the concubines or one of the wives, she was there on her knees helping her to support her in childbirth. So we're not quite sure how the Hebrews were having children, but the adopting mother was there with her. Childbirth was very dangerous in those years. The mortality rate was very high for the infant and for the mother, because of course health care was not so prominent. You had those kind of doctors that use herbs and medicines like that to help. But remember, in the Bible, an analogy to pain is always childbirth. It's always the biggest pain is childbirth. Mothers in the Bible were greatly respected, as group three said. If you notice, they always talk about the kings of the mothers of the kings. Sometimes they were named. It shows how respected they were, because if you notice, not a lot of women names got into the Bible, because of course you're saying that men wrote the Bible, and the little bit that we're gleaming to see what it was like for women in Bible times is from what the men wrote. So you are very right to say that we don't have a big perspective of what it was like then. Now we're on to our next section and our next group number four, and we're going to talk about polygamy and the wives and concubines. I mean, it's not a topic that we love, but it's this the Western world loves, you know, but okay. So let's hear your names as you, and the timer is over there. He will tell you the time.
Hi, my name is Ann Lariel, and I'm Andrea Brown. Tell about the evidence of polygamy in the Old Testament and the New Testament.
The very first polygamist was Lamech in Genesis chapter 4, verse 23. And we have to keep in mind regarding polygamy that the Bible does not commonly make judgments regarding many actions of Bible characters, but the results speak for themselves, that we should learn from the results. And that was certainly the situation with polygamy. God warned the kings in Deuteronomy not to take many wives, lest his heart turn away. And safeguards, there were... Go ahead. Sorry.
The difference in status of wives and concubines.
The wives had some status that it seemed the concubines didn't, so that wives had food, clothing, and marriage rights. And I'm not exactly sure what the marriage rights, if that meant a visit from your husband, on a more regular basis, or what exactly that meant. And what we discovered is polygamy seems to have pretty much disappeared by New Testament times.
Yes.
How does the Bible view widows and orphans, widows, orphans, and slaves?
Widows and slaves were definitely the most unfortunate class of women in the ancient world. And orphans were usually listed with them, and especially because they had no man to stand up for them and to take care of them and to see that there was, that they had what they needed. Basically, we discovered that widows were to be treated, that they were to be protected, the way that Boaz and Naomi protected Ruth. They were to be treated with compassion. Jesus healed the son of the widow of Nain because he knew she had no one else to stand up for her and to provide for her. In Exodus chapter 22, verse 22, it says, "Do not take advantage of a widow or orphan." Mm-hmm.
What may cause a woman to turn to prostitution?
For this, we look to the story of Tamar and Judah, and we determined that because the father-in-law would not give her his son in marriage to carry on the family, that that perhaps that was a reason to turn to prostitution. She was making quite a statement with that, too.
What obligation did a family to widows of that family?
We discovered that the marriage there was the marriage duty of the surviving brother to marry the widow, and then the first son that was born would inherit the deceased's property to preserve his name. And we also discovered that there were quite a few well-known widows in Scripture, like Anna in Luke, the widow of Zarephath in 1 Kings, the widow of Nain that we just talked about, the persistent widow in Luke 18, mm-hmm. and the prophet's widow, whom Elijah helped.
Mm-hmm.
How does the Bible teach us to care for widows?
I hardly need to answer this one, do I? In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 3, the direct quote is from the New King James Version, honor widows who are really widows. So they are to be honored and cared for and respected. Mm-hmm. We also read from Acts chapter 6 how the widows were neglected in the daily distribution of food, and the Hellenists complained and said, hang on a minute, our widows aren't being, you know, you're not taking care of your widows. And so there were elders who were assigned to that, and then they were cared for. Those are our questions.
Okay, you give them a round of applause. Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Very good. We have some good presenters, don't we? Yes, yes. Okay. Polygamy was a fact of life in the Old Testament for the woman. And of course, we know from the stories there about how many wives Solomon had, how many concubines he had too. And we also knew about David and his five wives and how he still went on and tried to take somebody else's wife. And yes, we know that Hannah, husband, even though he was the high priest, he had another wife too. So it was very common in that in those days. But as we move to the New Testament time, we found out that less and less polygamy was in the church. Widows and slaves were the most unfortunate class of people, as was said. And they also put the orphans with them. And that's because they don't have any father. And sometimes the brother is too young to protect the girl. So, yes, so they were in that class. And the problem was, if the woman did not have a husband, and if she didn't have a son to inherit the property, then what was she left with? Nothing. She had nothing to live off of. She had nowhere to go if the family didn't decide to honor the fact and give her the next son or to help her in any way. And so most of the times, these widows went on to be prostitutes, because that's the only job that could bring them, that keep them alive. Yeah. And especially if they have girls to feed, you know. And so you can just imagine in that day, you being a woman, your husband dies, you have girls, and the family is not going to, or they don't have another son to carry on the name, or they won't give you the son that is there, that you are left with nothing, because his property is given to the next of kin. So the Bible tells us that we must not take advantage of the widows and orphans. And I think it is within that framework where they were trying to say, do not leave them to go and prostitute themselves in order for them to live. Take care of them. And if they're orphans, take care of them. If their father died and left them, they have nobody to take care of them, don't let them turn towards prostitution. Now, despite the fact that women, we're going on to the next topic, which we have group number 5, what kind of work did the woman do? But just to reiterate that in today's world, we still have the same kinds of problems with our widows and orphans in our church. As women ministers, leaders, we need to help to stabilize them, to help them, and to help our church to remind them that we have obligations to our widows and orphans.
Okay. So my name is Renette, and I'm going to talk about women's roles, some of the roles in the Bible times where she prepared the food and, you know, the common housework stuff we're familiar with today. Grinding of grain, and she would draw the water, and act as a hostess, for example, like as Martha and Mary in Luke 10. And question 2, what jobs or professions did they do? So some of the jobs of shepherdess, and like Rachel and Zipporah, the manufacturer and sale of fabric, and political leader, for example, some political leaders like Athaliah,
Jezebel, Esther, and Deborah.
And some were involved in business like Lydia and Sapphira and Priscilla. And ministry. And the prostitute that we covered is not. And we were questioning one slave whether that was to be the woman's role or her job. So what do you guys think?
I think you're either born into it or...
Yeah. And in Jeremiah 9, verse 17, it says that a woman could be have a profession as being a whaler. Mm-hmm. So those were some of the roles and jobs of women in the Bible times.
My name is Leanne, and the second part of this, for the other two questions, I guess, is... How did Jesus interact with the woman at the well and tell about the women of Proverbs 31? So the woman at the well I found in John. I didn't know if that was the same woman you were implying. Okay, so I found it.
No.
The woman at the well, how did he interact with her? Well, Jesus wasn't rude. Obviously, he talked to her and noticed that she didn't really know, like she knew of him, and he invited her to basically be saved. So really, you can't say that he like disrespected women or anything like that. He talked to them. He had them as followers in his ministry. Not too sure if that covers the question. But then tell about the women of Proverbs 31 and their role and importance in family business. When you read 31, the importance and roles of women, honestly, everything. We have to do everything, don't we? I think so. So ones that were pointed out here is she provides for her family, whether it's by food, working with her hands, making and selling scarves or sashes for the merchants to sell. She gets up before the crack of dawn and makes food for everybody. She, if they need a field or a bigger place, then she'll view the land and see if it's good or not. She does the planting. She's, like I said, she does everything.
Mm-hmm.
She extends her hands to the poor, so she's very gracious and generous. Like, she shares her wealth with the poor. She makes clothes for her family. She makes sure that her family is clothed in fine linen. Husbands at the gate were known for being like elders of the town or whatever, congregation town, I guess. And so basically, like, we lift them up. We give them the homemakers, I guess, is kind of where that term came from, because she made the home. She did everything, the food, the clothes, the house, everything. The importance was of utmost importance. Mm-hmm. Without a woman, what can men do without them?
very good. I think just the fact that the baby came up, we see that the woman does everything, you know. tells you some of the things that women do. Yes. So, recapping, the work of the woman, despite the fact that the woman had very little power, she was the real homemaker. She actually made the home, because everything had to be made from scratch. You couldn't just go to Winners or to Home Depot and buy the stuff. You had to make it from scratch, you know. So the clothes, she weaves the fabric, she weaves it, she makes it, you know, all of that. So she was most important in the home. She had a role to play as the mother. She also has a role to play as, we said before, she could be a shepherdess, you know, out there with the sheep. She could also be like Lydia, a woman of influence, a businesswoman. She could also be a prophetess. She could be a servant in the temple, at the temple gate, you know, to do whatever. She could be a singer in the temple, you know, so she could be a lot of things. Now, there was the matter of clothing, that they had to make clothes, and they had to make, grind the grain for food. So they made clothes for the, like the examples we see there in Rachel and Zipporah. They had to grind the wheat and whatever to make a food. And we have an example there where the Bible says that two will be grinding and one will be taken away. Another woman's job was drawing water. Remember Isaac and Rebekah, when he went to look for Rebekah, she was drawing the water. It was towards the evening. She went morning and evening. Another responsibility, she was a hostess. She would be there to wash the feet of any visitors that come in. And they were actually saying that at the Last Supper, there were more than 12 people there. There were lots of disciples there with, at the Last Supper, and they feel that some women were there, because the women were always segregated and put in another tent or another room, it wasn't counted. They are thinking that women were there. Other work is they could be a political leader. They know a lot about what was going on because they talked among each other. They had lots of influence, like Esther and Deborah, and like Lydia and Zipporah, Huldah and Phoebe, Tabitha, who was also known as Dorcas. She was a prophetess. She also gave clothes to the community. They worked into the community. Rahab, they are not sure whether she was an innkeeper or a prostitute, but those are some of the professions. And then we have the little slave girl. So they were in all sorts of different roles during Bible time. In spite of whatever, the Bible wife went out, whenever she went out with her husband, unlike the pictures that we see of her, Mary on top of the donkey and Joseph leading the donkey, it used to be the other way around. The woman was walking and the guy was on the donkey. So, yes, sad, but that was it. That's how it was. So the next group we are going to do at the temple, the next group is coming up now to do that.
Was actually writing the...
We don't know, but in culturally in Bible time, that's how it used to be. The man would be writing, but she was pregnant, so it could be. And he was a different guy. He was, because the fact that we talked about if the wife was no longer a virgin, he could have put her away and get back his dowry. He didn't, so we don't know.
So our questions go in regards to the temple. And the first one was, why did the Old Testament women not go to the temple more often? So referencing 1 Samuel 1 and 2, the men were required to attend certain temple or tabernacle services every year, but the women were not. They were exempted, but they were not excluded. And then tell about three spiritual women in the Bible. There are several, but we're going to focus on Mary, the mother of Jesus, Hannah, who was known for her mother's prayer, and Mary Magdalene, who first proclaimed the risen Savior.
I'm Judith.
Okay, the question number three, it says, Lydia, who was Lydia and how influential was her business life? So we know that Lydia was a seller of purple cloth. And what was interesting to us was the fact that she was already a worshiper of God before she met Paul. And also the other interesting part is that when she gave her, she was baptized, that her household was baptized with her.
Mm.
And so it shows that not only was she a businesswoman, but she obviously had prepared the hearts of her family and those that were living with her. She was influential, yeah. And she had her heart was open to hear the truth. Okay, the next question is, why is it important to know about woman prophets? Tell us some in the Bible. So here we have the examples of Miriam, Anna, Deborah, Hilda, Isaiah's wife, which got pregnant and carried the child as a prophecy, and Philip's daughters, which were also prophetess. And what's encouraging about this, what's important to know, is that as women, we have the ability to receive communications from God.
Amen.
And to share those with those around us.
Amen.
So God is just as able to use women than men. As we see that there are plenty of examples in the Bible that show that women had the ability to be a prophetess.
What was the role of women in the temple? So we never found anything very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
They donated their mirrors for the mm-hmm. labor. And in the one verse that we were looking in Deuteronomy, was not to be a cult prostitute, to display purity. And then the last one that was referenced in 1 Samuel chapter 2 was about prostitution. But we wanted to add some of our own stuff in here. Because it takes two to make a child, that if there was no woman, there would be no one in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And so also in regards to Hannah's story, she trained the future priest. Mm-hmm. She made him ready to give him to God.
Okay.
And that would not happen without a woman.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much, Judith and
Alki.
Yes, thank you so very much. You guys are really awesome. You dig quite a lot into the materials that were given to you, and it's really very good. So, yes, we go through quickly. The Hebrew women did not go to the temple because they had home duties to do. Sometimes they were pregnant. Sometimes they were looking about young ones. Sometimes they just couldn't get to the temple. But the men went. They weren't excluded. Now, they are saying that there is a part of a ceremony that the Jewish women light their candles 18 minutes before sunset. And they do not know where the custom came from, but they are thinking that mostly it's because they do not want to break the Sabbath. But it's a really beautiful way to start the Sabbath. Some people think that it has to do with Sarah as a miracle, and it's from Friday to Friday, but we are not quite sure where it came from. Now, also in the Bible, it talked about what you can wear. Is that the next one that we're to now? That's, yes. Which is the next group that have, okay. So what do we wear? What did women wear in Bible times? And we're coming to the last of it. I know that it's pretty tiring, but we are coming to the last of it. Is this our last group? Yes. Yes. Come on up.
Mm-hmm. I'm Carolyn.
Okay.
And we are going to talk about what we can wear. Adam and Eve were the first designers. Mm-hmm. We know that they saw themselves produced. But down through the centuries, the clothing has changed. In the beginning, men was, there was, Moses said that they're not supposed to wear the same, women and men were not supposed to wear the same clothes. So women were not supposed to wear what the clothes that men wear. But the design was almost similar. They had the undergarment, and then they had the loose, which for men, when they have to walk in the field, they have to take it out. The women used that for carrying their stuff and carrying the babies and cleaning the fields and all that sort of kind of stuff that women do. It was also decided that they were known by the clothes. It was run. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to talk much about it because she's going to do that first. The clothing for women at the end was, and the veil. Women had to cover themselves. It was a sign of modesty. And I think, because if the women are beautiful, every man wants a beautiful woman. So the women had to hide themselves so they don't have bloodshed. if you remember in one of the stories when the king looked out and saw the beautiful woman, Abraham had to lie and say, she's my sister.
Okay.
If she was covered, that wouldn't happen. And so the woman, the veil was a sign of modesty and secret. So the man, when they married, when they at the wedding night, they were surprised to see what they have. They didn't know what they have until the wedding night. So the veil was a sign of modesty.
How were the rich identified by their clothing? The wealthy people were identified by the clothing, which were, they had fringes. On the four corners of their clothes, there were fringes. But what I read here was speaking mainly about the woman. And I wrote down some things. Fringes, they had fringes and blue ribbons on their clothes. When they saw the fringes, they were to remember God's commandments. But normally, usually, they forget about God's commandment. They were only thinking about themselves and how they were adorned. Fringes on the four corners, they were embroidery. They had plenty embroidery. They had fine linen. They wore silk. They wore ornaments. That's mainly the females. They wore ornaments, bracelets on their hands and chains around their necks, jewels on their foreheads, earrings in their ears, and a beautiful crown upon their heads. Also gold and silver clothing and fine linen. Such adornment was condemned by Isaiah. He said they were proud and walked with stretched necks and batting of their eyes. Like I said, she giving the man the sweet eye just so that he could follow after her. Batting of the eyes, walking with the heels, and when they walk, you hear the heels click, click, click on the ground, and they're strutting, as you'll see sometimes the young women to the walking and they're going, and then the men go after them, and that's what they were doing back then, and Isaiah condemned them, because that's not what he expected them to do, because they were supposed to be identified as God's people, and they were supposed to show example to the people around them.
Figure out my section here. I'm to tell you about what does the Bible speak out against in jewelry or as jewelry. Well, there's a text that most women don't want to read, and it's in Peter, so I'm going to read that for you. Since you don't, because it speaks to us about how we shouldn't do certain things. And these two ladies are doing them, so I want you to listen. Likewise, ye wives, as in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may, without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives. Is this on?
Yes.
Whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing the gold and of putting on apparel. Now these ladies have their hair plaited. And what is the difference between plaiting the hair because you want to have pigtails or you want to look good or whatever, and what they were doing in Bible times? In your memory, can you think about pictures you've seen of how they did it in Bible times? Yes, they were doing it to look like what they weren't supposed to be. They would have large, big swirls of gold and silver and very high ornamental hairdos and so on. And so what is the lesson in this type of thing? It's to look like these ladies, to be modest, to in all your ways appear to be a Christian woman. I think that's it. Mm-hmm. Is that your time level
yes.
now?
Okay.
I can't believe she's shutting me down, but here I go.
Give them a round of applause. Yeah, the other, it's time for the other seminar. Our seminars are very long. They are custom made because they are materials that we have to cover in order to do the certification. But I want to thank you, ladies, for taking part today. You did an excellent, excellent job at peer teaching. Let's just run through this very quickly. We talked about in Bible time the clothes they used to wear. Lydia, we talked about Lydia wearing purple. It is a fabric that was for the richer class woman. And we also talked about Christ, referring to Christ coming back wearing white linen. White was very, very hard to do, to come up with the fabric white. And so Jesus, they do not think that he was wearing white in his day, but they are saying white he would appear back to, because that was the fabric that was so expensive, exclusive, and shows purity. Things that were different from the Old to the New Testament is that the people in Jerusalem and Judea were stricter with their interpretations of the law than those in Galilee. And they showed more resistance against Jesus. Those are some of the things that we saw. In conclusion, I must say that we went through biblical times and different things that the culture showed that women had to endure. And the setting of what the Bible was written to in, and the context in which we're reading some of the things about women. And so I'm hoping that that will help you to lay a foundation so that when you have to speak to women in your church, you could speak to some of these issues more correctly and according to what is said in the Bible. There are many instances that we have seen pictures that we tend to remember the pictures, but the pictures are not clearly representative of what is in the Bible. Be very careful. Read what the Bible says before you say that is what where it's coming from. I want to thank you very much this afternoon for coming to our presentation, and I want to encourage you to study the Bible. Study about the woman of the Bible and see in which context it speaks to us in today's world. God bless you, and I'll see you tomorrow. Question.
Here it says this is level one.
Yes.
How many levels?
Four. There are four levels, and in each level you have numerous modules.
Okay.
And so you're doing the modules for level one, for certification level one. And Sister Sandria, your director, will tell you whether you qualify to get the certificate or not, whether you have done all the classes.
And we. Do
some of the others get into talking about things that we can do in our local area?
Yes, yes, yes. You're going to do an assessment on Friday. That module will take the assessment that you do at home. Thank you so very much for your patience. Okay, please come early tomorrow. We will start a little earlier so that we can get out of here before they are ready to come in. Let me shut you down. Let me shut you down. We started a... Okay.
The way you said that,
it's his own seminars. Ours is. Mine is GC seminars for certification. So,
awesome.
Yeah, so it can be recorded.
It's mine.
It's his.
So if they need it, they have to pay for it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what's this presentation?
It's going to be on internet.
Oh.
Are we still on for tomorrow morning?
Yeah, I believe you. What time do you want tomorrow morning? Let me make sure. Is there nothing else in this room at 9:30?
I
remember that. Upper Lodge. No, you are still on.
Yes.
Because you have that slot anyway.
Yes. So they'll be here, I hope.
Well. Perfect. You have everything you need?
Yeah, I do.
The
microphone's not working.
I think it is, but I don't know how to work it. Okay. So if you want to turn it up if you want to. It is working. I just have to know how to use it. Some of those women. Is that? It looked like it was working. I don't know how to. It is working. It's working.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good.
I'm good.
The women come out, yes, and they get involved.
No, thank you. I didn't get to so sweet. Oh, no, they were busy. And I was like, they're not going to be able to sit.
Oh, yeah.
They were my young ones. They were someone's young ones. And then I realized they would not be able to manage them. I was like, oh, they're so cute. And so we drew. They drew. So I'll be back here tomorrow.
The women's ministry. If I had to do it, I wouldn't do it like that, but that's what the Jesus does.
How would you do it?
I would have to find some more relevancy, possibly, you know, sort of today's and stuff. But I'm trying my best to get the ladies involved. I write my own portion of the New Park and stuff, because usually they just go up there and just do that.
One second. I am not the queen of this.
You're not good at this?
I'm not the queen of this. Okay. Wait, 1 second.
Turn it off, turn it back
on. Turn it off.
Reset it.
Yes. And then it should be. Because Max would, try turning it back on. And then we're going to. And then it should. It should.
It should get up.
Like, Max is supposed to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
Max is supposed to be these beautiful, easy things, but sometimes I bring them to people and I'm just like, just make this do what it's supposed to do.
I've never had a problem, though.
I've never had a problem, but I've always had someone there to set it up for me.
Yeah.
And then I've always asked someone, just please teach me how to set up my mic, so that if there's no one there for me,
exactly,
I can, yeah. And they look at me like, oh, you won't.
There you go.
Is it okay?
It's a matter of who's setting, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So the same people come, or they have a different group in the morning that comes to see.
I think it's supposed to be different groups.
But I think they like it and they just come back.
They just
back.
Keep coming? Well, I mean, they pay to be here so they can...
They pay to do the seminar?
I believe so. I believe people have paid. That's what he said to me. People have paid to do this. I believe so, yes.
To do this seminar.
I believe so.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, I will leave, no problem.
Okay.
But I
didn't realize that. Each of our conferences.
Oh, okay. No, what I was saying is I'm enjoying watching your presentation because I'm trying to figure out, you know, seminar styles and how you want to do them. And so I'm just, thank you.
Thank you.
I didn't know you used to these two, they're so cute. Oh my goodness. No, it is. Like, how do you get people interactive? How do you get people to get engaged? And then all the women have to do is read some of those Bible verses, and the ones in the back are like, does it really say that? I'm like, it does. When you read those things in that context, that's what it really says.
But it's a lot of work to prepare. I had to sit and prepare.
Mm-hmm.
But once I prepare, because if not, it's just standing up there and just doing the.
And it's not so interesting.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Not so interesting.
Okay.
I'll see you guys.
My husband's a real critic. So
is he?
Yesterday he came and he's like, not enough engagement. So today, last night.
Mercy.
So today I had to work hard.
But it took a very better.
Thank you so very much, ladies. You did a good job.
Okay.
You did a really good job.
I will see you tomorrow.
Okay. Lovely meeting you.
Nice to meet you too. All right, Naveya and Ezekiel, you guys are going swimming? You don't think so? They've got big plans.
Thank you.
Have fun.
They were supposed to, but...
Oh, they were supposed to go swimming. Oh, no. Oh, see you later. Bye. Hiya. Oopsies.
Been taking.